This morning, I'd like to talk about social action. I believe it's a key Christian calling or a human vocation. I'll talk about some examples from our own Unitarian history. And in particular, I'll talk about far-right messaging and how we might counter those. It's an issue, I believe, that is not far from your minds, my mind, our collective minds, as we watch what is happening in our world. But first, a question for you. How do your beliefs, your convictions, even your theology, inform your understanding of justice, of social justice, perhaps social action? First, I want to just reflect on our reading, my reading this morning, our gospel reading. Say a few words about that. Do unto others as you would have them do to you, also known as the Golden Rule. It was the first century Rabbi Hillel who said, this phrase was the paramount command of God. Everything else, he said, is commentary. Well, that command doesn't have to come from God. I believe that is part of the human calling. But Jesus also said this, and then he added a whole list of very difficult behaviors we should adopt. I think this is a most difficult set of teachings of Jesus. And I am challenged here. I'm not sure about you. And Jesus here is not talking to one person. He is speaking to a group of people. He is talking about relationships. And when we look at the world and see so many enemies of the good, what are we to do? What is called the New Testament was originally written in Greek. Wycliffe's Bible in the 14th century is generally accepted as the first English translation, and it was based on the Catholic Church's version, which was in the Latin Vulgate, that is the Latin spoken by the people. And Tyndale's translation came in the mid-16th century, that would have been the second. Now, he based his translation on the Greek. And I'm going somewhere with this. The word that is translated as love in the passage we just read is the Greek word agape. There are several words in Greek that we translate as love. Philia is deep friendship. Eros is romantic or passionate loving. Storge refers to the affection between parents and children. Agape is an attitude of positive regard towards other people by which I wish for their well-being. Agape is the love that is said to come from God, a holy and sacred thing. Agape spurs us towards doing good. It brings with it empathy, compassion, and fully lived, it requires our resilience. And resilience, of course, is knowing that we will come across some big and small troubles. We will suffer disappointment, setbacks, tragedy. Resilience is about understanding that, accepting that, and learning how to navigate it with grace and with strength. And I'm sure everyone here has had to learn resilience, gained through adversity and pain, deep disappointment, and often feelings of hopelessness. Jesus in this passage is talking about relationships and how we might relate to each other, those we consider enemies, those we consider sinners, those who are our friends, people. We don't do it alone. We cannot do it alone. We need each other. We need community, a beloved community. We all seek an abundant and meaningful life, every one of us. I understand this as salvation. And agape love, with a healthy dose of empathy, compassion, and resilience, helps us understand what hurts and what helps. God tells us that we are loved, we are enough, and we must share our goodness and our gifts only when we can. And in the beloved community, we share with one another honestly our brokenness and what makes us whole, so that the place I inhabit doesn't feel like I am under the wrong piece of sky. We often begin our services here with the words, "Love is the doctrine of this church." And we love not to earn a place in the life hereafter, but because love is what nourishes the soul. It is salvation, and salvation means health and wholeness. It is agape, striving to live in right relationships with all, sinners and saints alike. And in our gospel passage today, Jesus was speaking to everyone, not just those who thought themselves as righteous, or not just those who thought themselves as sinners. You could argue with me on this one, but I think every authentic religious tradition has social campaigning and action as a key part of their mission, and Unitarians are no different. In fact, our Good Samaritan window down there is a common fixture in Unitarian chapels and churches. And that story is a call to love, to help everyone, particularly those in need, regardless of their background or perceived status, to practice agape. But also notice that the story of the Good Samaritan is about a pattern of abuse, insult upon injury. The man was beaten and robbed and subsequently walked over, ignored by seemingly righteous men. Yes, men. It took a Samaritan, the last person you'd expect, to care for him. Because Jesus told the story of a Samaritan. Samaritans were a hated Jewish minority. They were considered outcasts. They were considered unclean. This was the hero of that story. And I think our society is full of Samaritans. But social action within our own congregation has a long history. From our own Margaret Huxley and James Houghton, Theodore Parker, and later in life, Mr. Channing, to our own Unitarian Community Support Group. Now, Margaret Huxley was a pioneer in the education of nurses and the raising of nursing standards. She was president of the Irish Nurses Association. But she was the driving force behind efforts of church members here to relieve a housing crisis in Dublin. The Margaret Huxley Public Utility Society constructed family homes on Cork Street, which is named Huxley Crescent in her honour. The Margaret Huxley Memorial Window is there. It was gifted to the church by her good friend, the artist Sarah Purser. It is the smaller window beside the Good Samaritan. James Houghton was a social reformer, an anti-slavery campaigner. He was trustee of Strand Street and subsequently here in St. Stephen's Green. He was born in 1817 and was a member and activist in many organizations seeking social improvements for the people of Dublin. He actively promoted social and educational outlets for working people. He was behind the People's Gardens, the Botanic Gardens, and the Mechanics Institute. But he was a prominent anti-slavery campaigner, and he represented Ireland at the World's Anti-Slavery Conventions in London in 1838 and again in 1840. He is buried in Mount Jerome, well worth a visit. It is a very well-kept grave, and it has some plaster animals at his grave representing his work with botanic gardens. Now, he died in 1873, and he knew Frederick Douglass, who was in Dublin in 1845. Writing to William Lord Garrison, Douglass quoted from a speech delivered by Daniel O'Connell. Daniel O'Connell said, "I am the advocate of civil and religious liberty all over the globe and wherever tyranny exists. I am the foe of the tyrant wherever opposition shows itself. I am the foe of the oppressor wherever slavery rears its head. I am the enemy of the system, of the institution, call it by what name you will. I am the friend of liberty in every clime, class, color. My sympathy with distress is not confined with the narrow bounds of my own green island. No, it extends to every corner of the earth." Now, Frederick Douglass remarked, he said, "I confess I have never heard one by whom I was more completely captivated than by Mr. O'Connell." And as you know, this idea is echoed by Martin Luther King, who said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." His vision extended beyond simply being physically present at protests or marches. He recognized the power of moral leadership and the ability to mobilize people through words and ideas. He encouraged individuals to make a difference by taking a stand for what they believed in, even if it's from a distance. Now, incidentally, James Houghton hosted Douglass in his home on Eccles Street, and Douglass wrote about how much he enjoyed being with Mr. Houghton. Now, what was common among all of these Unitarians I just spoke about? They all sought to build coalitions. They came together with others who were seeking to bring about social change. Houghton with the anti-slavery organizations and Frederick Douglass, Huxley with the medical profession and this congregation. The Refugee Resettlement Group, and we know the work that they have done. They worked with the Irish Refugee Commission, the Irish government, and with this congregation. Coalitions emerge out of a realization that we all suffer from the injustices apparent in our society, and therefore we must come together with all our diverse needs, talents, and create one voice for change. So how might we today honor that Christian tradition, that Unitarian tradition, that human vocation for social action? I mentioned the Unitarian Refugee Welcome Group. They have done that. And I know that many of you here are engaged in some form of social action, and I want to acknowledge that. The Refugee Welcome Group have a very good template. We choose a campaign we can all get behind. Perhaps we might restart the Justice and Peace Committee that was a working group in this church. The idea is to build alliances with other NGOs who are working on a cause, be part of a coalition of like-minded people and organizations. Our collective voice will, in the words of Martin Luther King, bend the arc of the moral universe towards justice. I would briefly want to talk about a key issue facing our society, which is the strength of far-right narratives. But not just the strength of far-right narratives, the violence that it inspires. And I want to talk about one organization in Ireland that is doing some work, the Hope and Courage Collective. Their key mission is to enable communities to counter far-right narratives, whether that's against sex education in schools, the LGBTIQ plus community, migrants, refugees, or asylum seekers. They work with local community groups all up and down the country. For example, those who wish to say yes to welcoming strangers to their community. Two examples are Coolock for All, Ballyfermot for All, Castlebar, Claremorris for All, etc. They assist groups in making public statements to counter far-right messaging, and you know what those messages sound like. Ireland is full. Using dangerous combinations of words such as unvetted, military, aged, men. The Vice President of the United States recently said that your compassion belongs first and foremost to your fellow citizens, and only then, after that, you can think about others. And he said this as a faithful Roman Catholic, as a Christian. The new Pope, when he was a simple cardinal bishop, tweeted, J.D. Vance is wrong. It's a reference to today's gospel reading. Because we cannot keep the container of who belongs in our community small and inward-looking, the Hope and Courage Collective would encourage us not to spend our energy correcting or arguing with the opposition. Focus, they say, on your positive message. Focus on messages that amplify your vision and your values. First, they suggest that the community from which the message is coming from define itself. Then amplify the positive, what is good about our community. And thirdly, say what is needed to address the issues already in that community. And if there are serious issues in the community, like inequality or lack of services, name them, offer solutions, and point out whose responsibility it is to fix that problem. Shift the conversation towards solutions. Don't use terms used by the far right, because using their words only amplifies their narrative. We acknowledge there is anger and fear in communities, but let us channel those emotions towards concrete, constructive, and positive action. This is really important. Let us not cancel people by calling them out. Rather, let us call them in. We may not convince everyone, but we can convince most people when we speak truthfully and assertively. But this is how challenging it is. And I'm going to demonstrate that with some words from Dr. Michael Ryan, the Executive Director of the World Health Organization's Health Emergencies Program. And he delivered these remarks on the 1st of May. "We are starving the children of Gaza," he said. "If we don't do something about it, we are complicit with what is happening before our very eyes. We are causing this, you and us and everyone who does nothing about it. It's horrific. The children of Gaza should not have to pay the price, as all children have done in the past, for the sins of anyone around them. This just has to stop. Any right-thinking human being must stand up. As a doctor, as a physician, as someone watching more than 1,000 children without limbs, thousands of children with spinal cord injuries and severe head injuries from which they'll never recover, thousands and thousands of children with severe psychological distress that they may never recover from. We are watching this unfold before our very eyes, and we're not doing anything about it. As a physician, I'm angry. I'm angry with myself that I am not doing enough. I'm angry with everyone here," he said. "I'm angry with you. I'm angry at the world. This should not be happening. It cannot continue. It has to stop. This is an abomination." We have to ask ourselves the question, how much blood is enough to satisfy whatever the political objectives are of any regime? And Michael Ryan here is sounding helpless angry, powerless, despite his platform, despite his influence, and despite his privilege. Finally, these words I found recently, and I'm sorry, I don't know who said them. Living a life that matters doesn't happen by accident. It's not a matter of circumstance, but of choice. So choose a life that matters. Our sympathy with distress need not be confined within the narrow bounds of our own green island. No, it can extend itself to every corner of the earth. Amen.